achieve in the future. Eagle FM, the eye. The eye.
A very, very beautiful, beautiful Sunday morning to you, my beautiful audience, and welcome again on the Ex-Convi Diaries show with your host, Benyambeko Jonas. And I'm really, really, really excited that this Sunday we are back again. We are back with so much strength, and that we are going to look at how we are going to contribute when it comes to crimes and conviction, on how are we going to help our brothers and sisters that have became victims of crimes, and how we are going to help them so that at least they become better people. They have something to do after incarceration, because after all, we don't want these people to come here and reoffend. And today we have a really, really beautiful yet sensitive topic of discussion that we are going to tackle together. And I hope we are all going to contribute towards that. And I hope you keep on tuning in every Sunday, same time, 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock in the morning. You always be contributing. You always be there, pushing and pushing, knowing that, no, we are here, and we are here for the impact. We are here to push one another. We are here to help, extend a hand. We are here to give wisdom and knowledge so that we have a better community for Namibia. Not only for Namibia, but Namibia to the global, right? So our topic for today is crime and mental health. And once somebody hear mental health, they think of mental illness, people who are sick, people who are into psychiatric, people who are on medication. But it's not always like that. Once we speak of mental health and crimes, you could literally tell that, no, these two things, they are linked together, right? They are linked together. Crime and mental health. Something is missing. Something is not okay here. Because somebody with a good mental health, they will not be able to really get involved into crimes, because they will know about the consequences. They know about the outcome. They know what is coming their way. And when you link it to mental health, you can literally tell that this is somebody who lack support, I would say. Like some sort of needs, and they need somebody to step in for them. Now, linking crime to mental health, I want us to unpack it little by little, one by one, and I want us mostly to focus on men, especially African men. Maybe I'll throw in a question to why do young men from poor backgrounds always be the one that are drawn into crimes, right? Why always young men from poor backgrounds, young African men? Right? They are always the one that is who are involved into crimes, right? And, you know, this Sunday, I would say this is the most difficult topic, that you are tackling, but it's very, very important, because you will be asking yourself, why most people, especially young men from poor backgrounds, young African men are mostly the one that are always involved into criminal activities. Think about it. It's always black. It's always, you know, people with poor background, people with poor academics, people with lack of support. It's always them. And I'll tell you that it's not like we are blaming. This is not about blaming. We are not blaming young men. We are not justifying crime either. But it's about understanding the root causes so that we break that cycle. What happened to young men from poor backgrounds? What really happened? Is there something behind that we don't understand or we don't see? Or what is the motive behind that? And my beautiful audience, if you have to look at correctional facilities of prisons across Africa and the world at large, one thing will stand out, like a large number of inmates are young men, many from poor backgrounds. Many young men who are not privileged to a lot of things, be it education, be it resources, be it employment. And this really raises a serious concern. Why them? Why them? Why are young men from poor communities born? Are they born criminals? Are the young men from poor communities born criminals? And then the answer is no. Because crime itself does not start with the handcuffs. It should be something that started a long way back. Started in our homes, started in our schools, started in the streets where our children play and play and play with other kids. Right? And some of those struggles are silent that we don't even talk about them because it's always regarded as a very sensitive topic. But maybe let's highlight one thing one of the pushing factors to crimes and mental health that mostly affect young men, be it poverty. I would say poverty should be a very, very first push factor. Let's begin with poverty there. And I'm telling you, poverty is not just about money. Poverty is not about you lacking the finances. Poverty is about limited choices. And when a young man grow up in a home where there is no food, where there is no stable income, where there is no electricity, where there is no hope, survival just become a priority. There is no dreams there. There is no dreams because there is no a future. Or do you see any future there? If you are just in a home whereby for as long as you guys are eating, for as long as there is something to eat, for as long as people are managing, for as long as you guys exist, woke up, go to bed, cultivate if you're supposed to cultivate. Some they are not even privileged to have homes whereby they even cultivate and make their own food. It's just like that. Just imagine a young man waking up every day, watching your parents struggle, watching your parents fight each other, watching your father beating your mom, harassing your mom, harassing your sisters. Waking up every day to your father calling you useless, good for nothing. You were not meant to be born. We are speaking about crimes and mental health. And remember, I said, crimes didn't just start in the handcuffs when the police is already there to arrest you. But what happened? It starts in our homes. The fights. The gender-based violence. The discrimination in schools. In our community. In our street. You see? You're watching your mother cry because she can't afford just to pay the bills, to pay the rent, to take you to school. Watching your father feel like he's not a man enough because he's not able to to protect his family, to care for his family. And he will just be there feeling he has no power. And believe me, this poverty is the main pushing factor to crimes. Now, regarding to a young man, over time, it will just send a message. Poverty sends a message to a young man, and it says, you are on your own. You are a man, and you are supposed to provide. You are a man, and you are not supposed to be pity. You are a man, you don't need to feel empty. You are on your own. Get into the jungle, you should go and hunt. Are you there, my beautiful audience? You are on your own. You are a man. You are supposed to provide. Go out there. Go out there and make a living because you are a man. Right? And now look at you being a man. You do not have a qualification. You are not privileged even to the connection that people speak about today. How are you going to do it on your own? You do not have a support system. Your father never worked at a certain company whereby maybe you get old and then you inherit the family properties and his money and then, you know, start carrying out the family. There is nothing like that. You'll just be locked in the corner to survive in your own as a man. And believe me, this is a secret whereby nobody speaks about it. This is when somebody tells you that you are on your own because you are a man. This is when legal opportunities are closed and illegal ones begin to look very attractive. That is when crime starts to feel like just a shortcut. Right? And this is not because it's right, but because it feels like this is the only option. Remember, I said from the beginning, we are not justifying crimes. No. We are here to unpack every detail about factors that lead to crime. And one of it is poverty. When people are left hopeless, when people are left with no option but to try all these illegal activities that look so attractive that one would look at something like, no, I can do it. I'll succeed in that plan. That plan will work out. I'm a man. I'll make it work out. Right? And just like that, that only option that feels like it will give you the whole world, it will give you all the money or all that you need, it will lead you to crimes and conviction. And even at poverty here, you'll find people who don't have anyone. You just don't have anyone. Young women, they get into prostitution. And that is just how it will. Okay? And then another thing that contributes to crime and mental health is lack of education and opportunities. Most of the times I keep hearing people saying that education is a key to success. But for many, 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 many young men in poor communities, from poor backgrounds, that key is missing. That success, which is a key, it is missing. Some have attended overcrowded schools within limited resources. Some drop out early to help their family survive. Others are told repeatedly that they are failures. They will not make it in life. they should go and look after kettles. They should go and look for a job. And my beautiful audience, I still want to press this button that when education fails a child, the street do not. When a child did not make it in school, the street will not let go of that child until the streets swallow him or her, right? The street become the classroom, and the lessons there are very, very dangerous, right? I don't know how, I don't know. Even right now, people who they were never involved into any criminal activity, or they have never been involved into crimes and conviction, and you know, you don't have that qualification that is required to have a job, to have a good job, you'll be there struggling. Life feels like nothing is making sense here. Without education, young men, they struggle to find that job. And without the job, dignity is lost. And when dignity is lost, anger grows into them. And believe me, crime then just become the only way to prove manhood, to prove power, to prove respect. And these are the things that the society has denied. Do you even listen to some young men on how they boast about, you know, people fear me. If I go to that place or that shebeen or that club or that place, they'll even start making a way for me because they know Tangos is coming. Because they know somebody is coming and they should fear me. And this person is not feared because of what they do in the society or what role or title they carry in the society. Because the man looks very dangerous. Because the kind of things that this man does, it's very, very way too scary. And that is the only thing they'll be like. I mean, they'll be doing. They want to prove that I'm a man. I have power. And you must respect me. Some people are known in our villages and communities that that man can steal. They are the one that stole what, even that beautiful house that he has. He don't have any qualification. He did not do any inheritance. The man stole. The man killed. The man robbed. Right? That is the only option that is there. Why? Because this person failed when it comes to education, when it comes to academics. Education has failed him as a child. But the street welcomed him with all arms. And as I said it earlier, the lessons in the street are dangerous. Right? Another thing that also contributes to crimes and mental health is childhood trauma and broken homes. I want us to look at something that really being discussed, especially in our black community, childhood trauma. Childhood trauma, my goodness. So many young men or many young people who are involved into crime, they grew up witnessing violence. domestic abuse, alcoholism, neglection, abandonment. Some they were even raised without fathers. Others were abused physically, emotionally, sexually. And many were never, ever, ever taught how to process pain. This unhealed trauma does not just disappear in a child. It expresses itself. Sometimes it's through anger. Sometimes it's through violence. Sometimes it's through crime. And as a young man who grew up feeling unloved, feeling unsafe, feeling unheard, they may use crime as a way to feel powerful in a world where he cannot, or in a world where he once felt powerless. Right? People have been traumatized when they were kids. Now think of a young man or a young boy, just a boy child, that witnessed domestic abuse. I said it earlier. Witness a mother that is going through hardship, domestic violence. This child, every day and night, he is seeing his mother being beaten up, him being beaten out for no reason, for given no explanation. It's just a beating. Witnessing his parents fighting because of alcohol, people abusing alcohol, parents abusing alcohol. The whole community has no hope. There is no hope. What do you expect this boy to hide from all of these things? To be different from the surrounding? Witnessing him being neglected. Neglected because it's like he don't have what it takes to be a family child. Neglected because no one is seeing potentials in him. Neglected because people regard him as he is big enough to take care of himself. And neglected because they don't have parents. They were raised by an extended family. And this child was never treated well, never treated with love. Nobody ever told this child that we love you, we appreciate you, we want you to have a good future. We want you to go out there and thrive. We want you to do well in your education. This child has never, ever heard of such things. No one ever asked this boy, how was school? How does the future look like? What do you want to become in future once you are done with your studies? There is not even studies. No one will speak about that. And if there is studies, nobody care. Nobody care. Right now, most kids are going to school, but the parents are not even making efforts. If I ask a beautiful audience to call in the studio right now and say, no, me from Ohaingu or Ngumbula or what, I always remind my kids about their homeworks. I always make follow-up with their teachers. I don't know what we'll be listening to. Some they were abandoned. And I don't know what is happening nowadays. Parents are abandoning their own kids. I don't know if it's the trauma that happened during labor, or maybe something happened or during pregnancies. The abandonment is just too much. And people have trauma. They have unhealed wounds. They still have bleeding wounds. And this person is not a child anymore. This person is not a girl anymore. This person is not a boy anymore. He has grown. He is a man now. She is a woman. And people don't care. They are risking their lives. It's not because that is what they want, because they are responding to a 5-year-old boy. They are responding to a 5-year-old girl in them. They are responding to that child in them that is demanding and demanding and demanding those unmet needs. They became violent. They can't rest enough if he did not hurt anyone. He will not feel better if he did not rape anyone. He will not sleep if he did not see someone crying. And that's true. The trauma is still there. It did not disappear. This person is fighting something. That's why you will see people who are angry for no reason. People who are violent for no reason. People who are into crimes and they don't feel any pain. They don't feel anything. They'll be arrested, go to the correctional facility, stay there, come back, continue with crimes, and there is nothing that you can do. And another contributing factor of crimes, which is linked to mental health, is masculinity, pressure, and societal expectations. I don't know why society places heavy expectations on young men. Even in relationships, even in comes to family members, your parents expect so much from you because you are a man. They can even regard you as the man of the house, but you are not even the owner of the house. You are expected to provide even when you don't even have the capacity to. Young men are told, be strong, do not cry, provide, be a man. But what happened when a young man cannot provide? What happens when he feels weak? What happened when he feels very scared? What happens to him when he feels very lost? Should he still be strong? Should he still provide? Should he still remain a man for a man because he is supposed to be a man? Should he be not crying? What happened? So in many cases, when a man resists these things, when they are not capable, when they are not in good position to do what is expected of them, they are being mocked. Instead of being supported, they are being mocked. They are being judged instead of being helped. Right? And to survive this pressure, many young men, they turn into crime just to prove their worth, to prove that they are strong, to prove that you as a man, you are not supposed to cry because you are a man, to prove that they can provide, to prove that they are I'm a man enough. Right? I don't know if we are on board and we are listening and we are now seeing these things as, because we are supposed to take these things serious. Nobody pay attention to these things. And we have peer pressure and the street culture. I don't understand. Ignore the peer influence. I'm still talking about young men from poor backgrounds, from poor areas. You know, when these men grow up surrounded by others who are already involved in two crimes, those gangsters who are into drugs, who are into theft and robbery, who are into violence, when crime is normalized, it stops, feels nothing. It starts, feels like a career path. Earlier I said, there are people in our streets who are known as criminals, and people made peace with it. People don't even complain anymore. They don't report the police anymore if this specific person does something wrong, stole, harassed someone. The whole community just keep quiet, go silent. Because it's something that is now normalized. Just like that. And believe me, we are speaking about now the peer influencer. Think of now you having your child at home and this child doesn't feel seen, doesn't feel worth being a child, worth being part of the family. They start feeling invisible. Invisible at home, invisible at school, because no one gives them a chance to prove that I'll do better. Believe me, these kids, they are seen by those gangsters in the street. And belonging becomes more important than safety. Acceptance becomes more valuable than freedom. They start belonging where? In the street. They will start being recruited by the gangsters them. Right? And mental health and addressing pain. Believe me, my beautiful host, mental health plays a huge role in crime, especially when it's ignored. Depression, anxiety, anger, and trauma. Mostly, this kind of sickness, mental illness, when they go untreated in poor communities, when people don't get any mental health services, when those people who are seeking for help, counseling, psychosocial support, the only thing that they get is stigma. And you know what happened to young men? They provide their own self-medication, which is alcohol and drugs, because what you expect? They try to better a situation by using alcohol, by consuming substances abuse. And you know these things, it's a risk. It's like pouring fuel in the fire. And what do we do? Crimes just then becomes a system of untreated pain. They'll just go and express their pain into crimes, hurting people for no reason. Right? I also want us to talk about the system. The system and societal failure. Where poor communities always they feel really, really, really under-supported. They are not supported by the police as well. A young man will go to the police to report a certain case or something, a harm that was done to him. But even with our system, police system, the person is being mocked. Oh, you are a man. Why are you crying? You want to tell us that your girlfriend wants to rape you? How? Your girlfriend can never rape you. What does it take to believe that a man can rape his woman, but a woman can never rape his man? Just because he's a man. You see? There is this, and so much labels of criminal doors. The person you are just being, you know, it's like everything about a man, the men have to struggle. Young men are almost the one that are criminalized early. And one mistake become a life sentence of stigma. Once you are labeled as a criminal, your doors closes. Your job disappear. Your hope fades away. And this push young men back into crimes. Not because they want to return, but because the society has not given them a way forward. Remember about the ex-convict diaries. This show, why we always invite ex-convicts on board to come and share their incarceration journey, is because we want to create a way forward with them. What does your future look like? What do you want to do now in the future? What do you think would be a better option for you to improve your life, to take your life to the next level? All right, you may not have a good qualification, but you have the skill. You have the skill. You can use your own hand. Right? You can use your own hand. All right. I hope you are there on board listening to our beautiful, beautiful discussion and engagement. And maybe you can just get a short break whereby we're going to listen to a song by Nash that says Ngilindile. Enjoy.
Thank you. it's true, I'm still in love.
We are listening to Sash, that has been just, the song that we've been listening is Ngilindile. And now that we are back, remember I said that we are speaking about mental health, crime and mental health, and most of the times these are the scarce topics that people avoid. These are discussions that people mostly avoid. And I still want, even though we said childhood is part of the contribution factors to crimes, I still want us to go deep into it, on why, how childhood trauma leads people into crimes. I really, really want us to look at that. And remember, again, that on the ex-convict diaries, this is a space where we confront her truth with honesty and compassion. And this Sunday, this time, or this moment, we, I'm asking a very important question, like, how does childhood trauma lead people into crimes? And believe me, this conversation is not about any excuses. It's about understanding, because before many crimes are committed by these adultly people that we always see around, remember, or there is a sign that a child was first hurt. Right? A child was first heard, and then this child is just responding to that. So, but first I want us to look at, what is childhood trauma? Because, most of people, they don't even understand what childhood trauma is. Childhood trauma, one can say that it refers to a deeply distressing experience that happened during a child's formative years, when something that took place when you're really a child, and that may be a result of physical abuse, may result of sexual abuse, may result of emotional neglect, domestic violence, abandonment, extreme poverty, and growing up in an unsafe environment. And when we speak about trauma happens into childhood, which affects the brain while it's still developing, and a child does not yet have the emotional tool to process that pain, to process that fear, to process that betrayal. So instead of healing, that pain gets stored quietly, deeply, and most of the time, I'll tell you, it is invisible. Nobody sees that. You know, trauma does not just end when the event ends. It lives on somebody's mind, somebody's body, and somebody's behavior. That is mostly what childhood trauma is, and that is we as adults respond to. Maybe we can also look at the brain under trauma. You know, when a child grows up in that constant fear or that instability, the brain stays in a survival mode. This person is just surviving, right? And this is important to understand, that the brain learns to expect danger everywhere. Fight, flight, or freeze becomes the default response that way. And as a result, traumatized children often grow into adults who struggle with impulse control, with emotional regulation, and trust. Remember, I'm not just a radio presenter. I'm also a psychologist. Like, I'm into psychosocial support and mental health. And I will tell you, there are people out there who are really, really fighting the beast in them because they were emotionally abused when they were kids. That whole memory is stored in their brain and they are just responding now. And believe me, those traumatized children right now, they grew into adults who are struggling with the impulse control, with the emotional regulation, and struggling with trust. They easily get angry. Fear become constant. Decision making becomes a reactive instead of something that one have to be so thoughtful of. And in moments of stress, crime can become an impulsive reaction. Remember, we are speaking about crime and mental health, right? Crime become an impulse reaction, not a planned act of evil, but just a survival response learned earlier in their lives, right? And emotional numbness and aggressiveness. You know, with some of the children, they respond to trauma by becoming emotionally numb. Others become aggressive. And both responses are forms of self-protection. This person has built a wall between you and other people. I mean, herself or himself with other people. There is a wall there. They will protect, they will do the self-protection at all costs. And, you know, emotional numbness can make someone indifferent to consequences, which including harming their action, of course, them being aggressive. But on the other hand, it can also become a learned language. Because if a child grow up in a home where violence is normal, so what do you expect? Violence become a familiar too. If shouting, if hitting, if threatening someone, it's what comes as a conflict resolution, then those methods are repeated later in life when one becomes an adult. Crime, especially the violent crime, can become an extension of all learned behaviors. People, they learn through these things. They have learned all these behaviors when they were kids. And now they are just processing. They are just processing, right? They have processed that. They have stored that. And now they are just repeating those methods in real life, right? Regarding trust, attachment, and belongingness, you know, healthy childhoods teach trust and secure attachment, but traumatized children, they do opposite. They do the opposite. When our parents or when our caregivers are very abusive, or when our parents are very abusive, the children, they learn that people cannot be trusted. And this affects relationships. It affects all authority figures in the society as a whole. And when a young person is traumatized, they may reject the rules. You know, there is rules allocated there. Be it now by our government, by the law enforcement, there are also social norms. They reject all of that because they were never protected by them. And loyalty may shift from family to society to gangsters or criminal networks. And not because they are good, but because they offer belongingness. They feel safe there. They feel like they belong to that society gang, to that criminal network. Because at home, this person, there is no attachment. There is no trust. There is no sense of belongingness. Right? Belongingness is a power. It's very powerful. When a positive space rejects someone, the negative ones welcome them. And that is the street. We are speaking about childhood trauma. We are speaking about how childhood trauma leads to crimes and conviction. And then we have low self-esteem, the low self-worth, the identity, the struggle to identify yourself. You know, trauma attacks identity. And children who experience abuse, they mostly grow up behaving they are worthless. They are unloved and they are broken. That belief shapes behaviors. Some, they commit crimes because they feel they have nothing to lose. Imagine someone committing a crime and they feel like they have nothing to lose. I have nothing to lose. I have nothing to lose. Others may seek validation through risk or illegal act. Some may also sabotage their own lives because of pain. Pain feels familiar. So now, with this whole circle, with this whole entanglement, crime becomes just a way of express that internal chaos when they can't express in words. Right? Speaking of childhood trauma, how it leads to crimes and conviction, how it damaged a fellow individual, that they forget about themselves. You know, I've seen in so many ways when people with unmet needs, they turn into alcohol, substance abuse, as an escape of feeling lonely, feeling unloved, feeling unsupported, you know. And many people with childhood trauma, they tend to alcohol or drugs to escape that emotional pain. And most of people look at this as self-medication, right? Whenever you are feeling sad, you have a cigarette, or you drink a bottle of alcohol, or you will, I don't know. You know, those substances just temporarily numb memories, anxiety, fear, right? And you know, when it comes to substance abuse and crime, they work together. Shift to support addiction, violence under influence, and risk decisions that becomes more likely. Like you have no fear, nothing. I want to let you know that crime is not the root. Trauma is the root. All of these things are happening because of trauma. All right? It's because of trauma. And then now we look at prison. Prison is a condition of trauma. This person was already traumatized. This person is still battling with childhood trauma. And now what? What happened? Once they commit a crime, they'll go away? Go to prison. All right? So now it will just become a continuation of trauma. For many traumatized individuals, prison become a continuation of childhood trauma rather than a correction. The isolation, the violence, the humiliation, the powerlessness mirror early abuse. And without the trauma-informed rehabilitation, which I really, really appreciate that our Namibia Correctional Services always offer that. Because if it's not, if there is no trauma-informed rehabilitation, then their whole life in prison hardens pain instead of healing. And this is why many reoffend, not because they want to, but because of the unresolved trauma following them back in the society. People did not heal completely. People are promised good futures that no one can fulfill. You know? We also have now, how does healing contributes to crime prevention? We are speaking of trauma. We are speaking of bleeding wounds. We are speaking of adults responding to a 5 years old in him or in them. So now, looking at healing as crime prevention, if trauma contributes to crime, then healing becomes prevention, right? So with the early childhood intervention, with the counseling, with the safe homes, with the mentorship and community support, that way people's lives can be changed. People don't even seek for counseling anymore because they feel like they can do it on their own. But are you sure you can do it on your own? Children are not supported anymore. But one thing that I know for sure is when children are protected, when children are listened to, when children are loved correctly and genuinely, they grow into adults who do not need crimes to survive. Right? When you feel supported, when you feel heard, when you feel like there is someone out there who listens to me, who believes in me, who loves me, I don't think there will be any reason for you to overlapse. I mean, your behavior to go into crimes. You won't even have a chance to think about something like that. Because there is hope. There is a future. Right? Right? I want to remember something. And something that you should never forget. That behind many crimes, there is a wounded child who never received help. Behind many crimes, there is a child with unmet needs. Behind so many, many crimes, there is an adult that is responding to childhood trauma. So understanding childhood trauma does not excuse crimes at all. We are here to explain it. And explaining it is a first step towards solution. Is a first step for us to make preventative ways on how we are going to work on this. All right. All right. Maybe we can also take a very, very short break and listen to Zothikis as he says, keep holding on. We can have a short break and then we can just back in the studio.
Your heart is healing, let new life begin.
Yeah, that's the voice of Zonti's keys that says, keep holding on, even if nobody sees you, nobody is holding on you, that when it's going to make sense. All right, welcome back, my beautiful audience. And I should really, really appreciate you that you are still tuned to the Ex-Convict Diaries show. And for those that are just joining us this morning, we have been unpacking the deep and uncomfortable link between mental health and crime. And we have spoken about childhood trauma, poverty, and pain as the main major contributing factors to crimes and conviction. And now, with the remaining minutes to 9 o'clock, we want to go deeper, right? In not just about the problems, but into the solutions, the truths that we always avoid, the hope that exists when we choose healing over judgment. So I want this to dive into mental health myths that push people into crimes. And this is, I said it from the beginning, that this is one of the most sensitive topic that mostly we avoid to speak about, because we don't want to feel like we are offending people, or we are judging people, or we just have less work to say regarding this. But I will tell you that one of the most dangerous things in our society is misinformation about mental health, because many people, they still believe that having a mental health challenge means that you are violent, meaning that you are unstable, and meaning that you are dangerous. But that is not true. In fact, people living with mental health conditions are more likely to be victims than perpetrators of violence. And the real danger is untreated mental health. You know, when the pain is ignored, it does not just disappear, it finds expression. And that is what I said earlier. So when emotions are suppressed, they eventually just explode, and later on they become what? They become victims of crimes and conviction, especially for men. You know, for men, you know, the fact that society has taught them silence. They are taught not to cry. They are taught to, they are forced to be strong, and they are forced to handle it yourself, because you are a man. So with all this unspoken pain becomes anger, all this undressed trauma becomes aggression, and all these untreated mental health issues leads to impulsive decision. And that is what sometimes criminal ones tend getting themselves into. And we must also understand that mental health struggle does not really cause crime, but neglection does. I want us to talk honestly about the correctional facility for prison at large, be it now in Namibia or global at large. You know, prison is not supposed to, it's supposed to be a correct behavior, right? Somebody has to be corrected for the conviction that they are convicted for, the crimes that they have convicted. But for so many people, it worsened their mental health. Remember, we are speaking about mental health, right? Imagine when someone who already grew up without trauma, and now isolation is added to it. I'm not saying it's wrong, but I'm just looking at it from the mental health perspective angle. Now think of someone who has grew up with trauma, and now they feel very isolated in that cell or in that correctional facility wall. Think of violence, think of the humiliation, think of the fear, the pressure coming from the society, them being labeled as criminals, them being labeled as nothing. So now the question of facility becomes a continuation of childhood trauma, not a solution. I'll look at that. I'll look at it it that way. Remember, I said I'm not speaking for crime either, and I'm not supporting the isolation. Now, looking at the mental health state of a person and coming from that angle. So, with the view, very few inmates that receive the proper psychosocial support. Many, they leave prison still angrier. They're still broken, and they're even hopeless than when they entered, because and then we ask, why did they reoffend? Why did you reoffend? Why did you still commit that crime again? Why did you still come here and you still ended up going back to prison? So we release people from the correctional facility, but we do not release them from pain. These people are still bleeding. I would really appreciate if someone has to go there and really come back fully healed, so that they don't have to respond to that pain in future and reoffend again. And, you know, without mental health care, reintegration becomes almost impossible. You know, the cycle continue, you know, the cycle of arrest, the cycle of the correctional facility, the cycle of the release, the cycle of relapse. Coming back and going back to correctional facility, coming back and going back to, what is this? Crimes and conviction. And we want less crime, right? And if you want, less crime, we must invest in rehabilitation and not just us being here judging people. I always so feel pity, and I always have a question that, nobody really, look at maybe seriously, or probably give me the right reasons, because I'm always concerned. I don't really, you know, for someone committing a crime and have to go to the correctional facility, it's not really my problem, or it's not really something I'm paying attention to, because, you know, when one goes to the correctional facility, they are serving terms there. They are being corrected. They are being corrected, right? They are being corrected. They are given some opportunities to study the skill development courses. They'll have the skill, they'll have the knowledge. And then my most concern is, once now they are back in the correctional facility with their criminal record, with a criminal record, and with a society that's full of stigma, with the scarce employment that you really have to do extra to be employed nowadays, with the competition with the newly graduate in the industry. Now, with this person that has been really, really helpless and hopeless, what happened when they are back? What is the starting point for them to come out right, for them not to go back and reoffend? How do they start in seeking for employment, having somebody to keep them motivated and telling them to keep pushing? How do they seek for support in case of business opportunities, or probably just starting their own businesses, especially that, you know, in skill development and vocationals, they don't really need a qualification or paper. They will need the skill that they'll be able to implement on ground and produce something, develop something, be creative, work on something, right? With these skills, what happened to it? What happened to it, right? So I'm always just concerned about that. And I'm like, okay, if these people are supported, if these people are cared for, if these people, maybe there is somebody out there who will be able to offer employment to this person without judgments or anything related, maybe there will be reduction in crimes. But even that, it's okay. We are speaking about that we want less crime, right? And we must invest in rehabilitation and not just punishment. How many rehabilitation centers do we have in Namibia, apart from the correctional facility that we have? how many rehab centers that we have, especially in the northern part of Namibia. I don't know if there is any. I'm not aware. But lately, I've seen some of the disciplinary boot camps whereby I think parents take their kids there, which is really, really a good initiative because there is a behavioral, when there is training in behavioral change in a child, then they are being prepared for something really good. Their mindset are being shifted here and there, but maybe also just need more of rehab centers, especially in the northern part of Namibia, because maybe the coast or the southern part of the country maybe have something which I'm not really sure about. But I'm really glad that the Namibia Correctional Services is doing the most when it comes to rehabilitation. But we also just need to get more into reintegration, right? And another unfortunate truth, whereby there is a misconception or misinformation when it comes to mental health and crimes, substance abuse and crime are closely linked to mental health. So, you know, many people, they don't use drugs or alcohol because they are bad people. People are not using drugs and alcohol because they are bad people. The truth is, and this is uncomfortable. That is why I said another uncomfortable truth when it comes to mental health, crimes and substance abuse. The uncomfortable truth is many people don't use drugs. Many people don't drink alcohol because they are bad people. It's because they use substances. They use substances because they are hurting. Did you hear that? They use this substance because they are hurting, right? Drugs and alcohol become a way to escape that trauma, that anxiety. And I think I said this close to 3 times now, right? That depression and that memory that refused to rest, The only pill that they can swallow and let that rest for a moment, that anxiety, that thought of what will happen tomorrow, what will happen to me tomorrow if I did not do ABCD, what will happen to me if I have to stay, I have to remain unemployed close to 5 years now. Why did I do ABCD? What is happening in my life? Why is it me? Ever since my childhood thing has not been working so well, nothing has been really good into my favor. I haven't been privileged to a lot of nice things, a lot of opportunities. I think a lot of good things has been bypassing me. And I think it's of no use for me to be a better person, a trying person. And, you know, it's just something. So now people use alcohol and substances as a way of putting all this to sleep, right? Making sure that the trauma, the anxiety, the depression rests a little bit, right? But substances don't heal that pain. I'm sorry to say that. It does not heal that pain. What it does, it multiplies the problems, right? They lower those inhibitions. They weaken the judgment. They increase the aggression. And this is how addiction and crime work hand in hand. Right? You think that you are running away from it, but they are working hand in hand, right? They are working hand in hand. Right? They are working hand in hand. Addiction and crime, they work hand in hand. You know, the theft and robbery part will find addiction, will find violence under influence, risk decision that change your lives forever, and it's not for good, it's really for worse, because you always learn in the correctional facility, right? You always have to learn there, right? And addiction is not just a criminal issue, it is a mental health crisis. And until we treat it as such, honestly, prisons or the correctional facilities will always remain full, full of people who are privileged to do something, I mean, to be better people in lives, and full of all these visionary people that they were never given a chance to get it right on track and live the have fulfilling lives. And I want us to have a short break before we proceed with healing as a crime prevention still, which I still want us to look at, because we don't see hope in so many things when we are broken. Okay, we are going on a short break whereby we are going to listen to Nash, that she's singing Ngiyafile with Six, I Am Alive. Let's go on a short break and just come back to that. Enjoy the song.
Hallelujah.
Right, it's good to be back, and now let's shift to hope. If untreated mental health contributes to crime, then healing becomes crime prevention. I keep saying that. Imagine a society where boys are taught to express emotions, where trauma is addressed early, where counseling is accessible, and where mentorship replaces gangs. You see, just imagine now, just take it back or think front and think ahead and just imagine how Namibia will be a better country to stay forever, on how your village, your community be so safe that everybody is understood and heard, right? Because for as much as we keep telling ourselves that we are very strong and we'll be better people, healing does not start in the Krishna facility. Don't wait until it's too late for you that you already made bad choices, wrong choices. You have already landed into Krishna facility. Your anger issue, because I believe and I know that most of people, they are not bad people. But the anger issue, there was a time when I felt so angry to a point where I'm like, my God, what could I have done? I was so angry that I was very, very aggressive. To a point whereby if that person that I had a misunderstanding with in a phone call, if only that person could be next to me, what would have happened? What would I have done? My goodness. Is this what if? What if? What if? And the what if always comes really, really late, right? So now just imagine where a society, where boys, these young boys, our children, are taught to express emotions, where they are taught to address all the trauma early, where counseling is accessible to everyone, available to everyone, offered to everyone. It's not necessary that we have to sit in a professional set up counseling room for you to offer counseling to someone. No, even at home, at church, at school, have a space whereby you'll be able to offer support to someone, right? Healing does not start in prison. It starts in our homes, in our schools, and in our community. And, when people feel supported, what happened to when you feel supported? Now just look at you. When you feel supported, they don't need crime to survive. I have said that. When pain is acknowledged, violence reduces. When dignity is restored, people even start making better choices, choices that will change their life forever. Healing is cheaper than incarceration, believe me. People of God, we are encouraged that we need to seek for healing. We need to let go. Because you can afford healing than being a sentence in prison. They said prevention is more powerful than punishment. Don't wait when it's too late, when you can't you can't do anything anymore. And they want us to shift to a real talk. What ex-convict actually need. And I want us to end this with honesty. What do ex-convict actually need to stay out of crime? They need understanding. They need mental health support. They need opportunities. And they need a community, not isolation. Understanding, when you have to understand someone within, understanding to, okay, I really, you said, what happened to you? What really happened? How did you land yourself into crimes? I need to understand something. I need to see the gap, and I want to fill the gap with you. Not just this judgment. Oh, you wanted what? Even other people, even other, your fellow men are struggling in the street. Why can't you go and struggle too? Oh, so you think that is the only solution, that is the only better thing that you can do? You are speaking now to an ex-convict that need understanding, that need to be understood, that somebody who don't need to be reminded of what they have done, what they did in the past. You don't need to bring back their past to prove to them that I understand you, I can see you, I feel you. Understand with compassion. Understand with love, with support, right? Instead of that constant judgment. Okay? These people, they need mental health support. But not all these lectures that we do. 90% of what we do, we lecture them. We blame them. We always just shift blames on them. We want to make choices for them. We want to... It's like you don't understand where this person have been for the past 20 years. This person has been in prison for 20 years. This person has been going through a lot during their incarceration. This person has suffered emotionally, mentally, physically. But as soon as they are back to us in our homes, what do? We shift blames. We don't support them mentally. We are not present. What we do is just to lecture them. He does that. He don't even know how to do what. We wish he could stay there for what. Why is he back? He became a burden to us. He what, you know. It's only the lectures. We cannot hire somebody to do what anymore. He's available. He don't have what it takes to what. He must go look for cattle. He must be now working in the field. He must be what? It's like you just want to make life hard for another person. But we are speaking about mental health support. How are you ensuring that you understand this person, you are supporting this person mentally, that they will not have any idea to go back to crime, to go and re-offend. They will never feel neglected. They will never feel abandoned. They will never feel like they don't mean anything. They will never have a thought of, I wish I could have died while I was in the correctional facility. I wish I didn't come back. Because what hell is this? I thought it was done. I thought the pain is over. But this is another journey that I have to suffer again. It's like it's another portion added to the other, right? They need opportunities, but not closed doors. Ex-convicts need opportunities. They need the exposure. These people are hungry for success. They are hungry to prove to themselves that I can be a better person. I don't want to be that person that I knew. I don't want to be that person that committed that crime when I was 25. I'm a 45 years old man now. I want an opportunity that I'll be able to provide for my family. I want to be given an opportunity that I'll be able to work with my own hands. I want to be given an opportunity that I'll be able to earn a salary and money that I'll be able to take care of myself. I want to be given an opportunity that I'll have this opportunity to pay all the years that I have wasted in prison. But what do? We close doors. We close doors. They need a community to support them, but not isolation. These people don't need to be alone again. They need us, family members. They want to participate in community activities, community program, everything that is happening. They want to feel like life still exists. I feel exist. I'm still opportunity to a better life and a better future, right? But most importantly, they need to be seen as human beings and not permanent mistakes. The discrimination and stigma that comes from the society really harden them. It puts them down. They want to feel like, I'm a human again. I did a mistake, yes, but that was not permanent. I can be a better person. And I want to speak to all the employers that are listening this morning, that second chances change lives. And to all our families, your support can save someone from returning to prison. A little support. You as an employer offering employment to someone, you don't need to make them your finance officers. You don't need to make them your HR. Just an opportunity. An opportunity to earn something. You are offering a second chance to this person. And to our young men listening, your pain does not define you. You need to speak up. You need to come out. You need to express yourself. You need to let the pain out, right? With that, I also want us to go to a short break whereby you are going to listen to our last song, and that will just come back and close up. It's me, your host, Penelope Jonas, and I just want to make sure that please, every Sunday, you should always have this opportunity to tune in, and you should always tune in from 7 o'clock to 9 so that you don't miss out. With that, I want you to have a short break again and listen to a song. So I want us to listen to an Amapiano song by DJ Zeta that says, Stand Sami.
Ngikuthanda ngenhliziyo yami.
Good to be back again, and I hope you have enjoyed the song. So as we come to the end of our show, I want us to reflect in few things that you know. So it's good to be back, and believe me, when I've been listening to the song, I've been also reflecting, not reflecting just as a radio presenter leading this show, but I've been reflecting as a human being living in the same society. We are all trying to make a sense of, you know, conversations like this. One do not end when a microphone goes off, but they stay with me because they force me to confront the truth that easy to avoid but impossible to ignore. And I have come to understand that crime is really the beginning of a story, and it's often that the final chapter of a long journey is filled with pain that went unnoticed, with the wounds that were never treated and the voices that were never heard, were never heard. So when I look beyond the headlines and the statistics, I see people whose lives were shaped by circumstances they did not really choose to get themselves into, yet were later judged harshly for how they have survived them. So what troubles me the most is how quickly we separate ourselves from those who have fallen into crimes, as if their experience have nothing to do with us. Because believe me, this is our love people that we are supposed to support, and you know, these are the involvements that we all have to tolerate. You know, the iniquities, the inequalities we normalize and the silence we maintain all play a role in shaping the outcome. And when when the support system fail, when the mental health, emotional struggles are dismissed, when nobody is heard, nobody is listening, their consequences eventually just find their way back to all of us. Remember, it's not just about people who are committing crimes, it's about you as well, a family member, you as a friend, as a sibling, that you are supposed to step in for this person. And, you know, your mental health as well is affected, not just about their mental health, it's also about our mental health, it's about my mental health as a radio presenter, listening to stories every day and just reflecting on it and say like, okay, where did we go wrong and how best we can look at all of those things. I've also learned that, you know, punishment alone does not bring healing. It may remove someone from the society for a time, you know, when somebody has to spend years into the correctional facility, but it does not address the inner damage that led them there. So without healing, my beautiful people, pain simply changes form. It returns through broken relationships, repeated mistakes and cycles that means impossible to escape. And that is why people keep reoffending or go back to correctional facility. And I cannot ignore the reality that many people leave punishment carrying heavier burdens than when they have entered it. And this is why I believe that understanding is not a weakness, it is a responsibility. And choosing to listen does not mean excuses. I mean, excusing harm. It means recognizing that real change begins when we address the causes, when we address the root causes, what really happened, what led you into this. So not just the consequences that always bring us to the positive side of life, but when we also acknowledge the mental health and the emotional pain earlier, so that we'll be able to create a space for different choices to be made. So I'll also be standing with you and, because I'm convinced that prevention is not just about the perfection, right? Because mostly we just focus on the perfection, but it's about the presence, right? It is about being present in our homes, being present in our schools and communities, that love, that belongingness, and all that in our community at large. So it's about creating the environment where people really feel seen, where people feel supported, where they don't feel desperate of anything, where they don't feel that they don't belong here. And I speak to you this morning, I am reminded that healing is not only personal, it is a collective, whereby we are all supposed to heal from all that is troubling us and start just living our life and having it all to ourselves. And I believe that fewer of us, we may feel like life has we have lost, life did us birth, but I think it's high time that we have to give ourselves a second chance, that no, I have to restart again, I have to be a better person again. Because I believe that when we choose ourselves, then there is nothing will go wrong with us, because we always have time and make time for us to align and to see, why would I make this decision, what are the consequences that come out of it, and maybe I need to be more patient with myself. And I say, as my beautiful audience, as we sign out this morning, this Sunday, I do so with this conviction. People are more than their worst decisions, and I want us to acknowledge that people can be very weak, people can be at their lowest, and they always just need our support. It's me, your host, Penelope Jonas, and I'm always feeling that if we are to come together and tackle issues like mental health, maybe there will be a reduction to crimes. And we also give support to people who are seeking support in a silent manner, that who don't really come knocking on our doors and say, look, I need help, but they are there bleeding, their faces are so hard, and if you have to have humanity and give it to the next person, that we then will be able to see pain in other people's eyes without them having to seek for it. So it's me, your host, Penelope Jonas, and I'm grateful that you should keep tuning in every Sunday at 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock in the morning on the Ex-COVID Diaries show. And please don't forget to always subscribe and follow us on our social media pages, Eagle FM Namibia, on YouTube, on Instagram, on TikTok, on Facebook, yes. And also, please, don't forget to download Eagle FM app Namibia so that you tune in every day. Thank you so much. Have a lovely, lovely, lovely weekend until we see each other again next Sunday. Bye.